Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unlimited Podcast Works. This is our third episode, and today we will be joined by Rikuto Osaka and Anime Dude, along with everyone's favorite Dino Saucer, Ken, and myself, and we will now join our discussion of Haruhi Suzumiya, already in progress. Well, we were talking about Haruhi Suzumiya, the girl that can control reality, and all the strange things that she does with that.
Right. She does a lot of strange things. And some things she doesn't even do on her own. Things just happen.
I have a question for you. Do you remember the scene with those giants? Itsuki takes Kyon over to this reality and shows him this alternate reality and shows him what is the consequence of Haruhi's reality manipulation.
Right.
If one of those things had touched Haruhi, what do you think would have happened?
That's a good question.
Probably third impact from Neon Genesis Evangelion.
So everyone would turn into Tang? Sweet, orangey, vitamin C-filled Tang?
Yes. No. I believe that reality they were in would have ceased to exist, and she probably would have created another one. Maybe one where, you know, time travel is an, you know, accepted occupation.
That's an interesting discussion for us to have about this. Exactly how old is Haruhi's universe?
The characters in the show keep referencing something that happened 3 years ago.
3 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. Right, but okay. I don't know what, because I haven't read the novels yet, or even, I don't even know if the novels address this, so it's implied that the Haruhi universe is only 3 years old.
From what I understand, I think it is. The novels do touch that, but sorry for interrupting.
No, no, what do they say?
Spoiler alert,
just
so you know. This is the, all I know is that, what's her name?
Mikuru Asahina.
Miku.
Is the time traveler.
Yeah. Sends Kyon 3 years ago and meets young Haruhi.
Ah, so Kyon is unwittingly an accomplice in Mikuru's plan.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of interesting. Haruhi is so boisterous and exuberant and wants to impose her will on everything, whereas Kyon in the anime is just so completely laid back and almost depressed before he starts participating in this club.
Right.
It's like the two balance each other out, plus and minus. Bert and Ernie, peanut butter and jelly.
Sherlock and Holmes. Sorry.
Peanut butter and jelly, that's a good idea.
I don't have a humorous simile, but... it's an interesting character concept. The show is really about Kyon and what happens with him, because he's the one who's stuck in this zany world, even though he wants to be normal. Or does he? That's the real question. He keeps saying, I want to be a normal person, of a normal life, but then he gets stuck with all these time travel and giant crickets and stuff, and he's like...
Yeah, giant crickets, that's funny.
Mm-hmm. Moving on with that, do you think that Kyon represents the guy who's supposed to be the audience member, as audience members, we want to hang out with all these beautiful girls and maybe that wacky guy in the club?
I think so, because I think he does represent the audience, because I think secretly he enjoys all this crazy stuff, because, you know, his life was pretty boring before any of that happened. But when he starts going to the club and all this stuff starts happening, you know, mm-hmm. you definitely see a change in his personality.
Yep.
Not a big one, but it's there. And you can see that he's acting differently. He's more, you know, outgoing and talkative.
Right.
You know, otaku.
Sorry about that.
It's all good. So otaku, go ahead, anime dude.
They're known for being, you know, introverted and, you know, in Japan at least.
Who wants to join in this club? Yeah, that maybe the SOS Brigade is one of those wish fulfillment type scenarios for the audience.
Right, because like I said, otaku in Japan anyway, they're known for being introverted and not very social. So to join this club with all these crazy people and have all these adventures is, I think, a dream that, you know, everybody can get in on. But I think they're a lot of fun, and I think the show might be tapping into that sort of wish that everybody wants, you know, to go have an adventure, even if...
I think
you're...
I think a lot of anime kind of taps into that, too.
Right.
We kind of have that sort of escapism, that adventure, that we may not always have the opportunity to do so in real life, but with, you know, through that character in Haruhi, we can kind of simulate, you know, those experiences while we watch. We can do it any time until, you know, we reach the end, and hopefully I think they're talking about making new episodes, so...
Yeah, they're pretty busy on season two, right?
Oh, I think they're in the middle of producing it, because there's a lot of stuff that they haven't touched on from the novels that they could use, and it'd be pretty, you know, stupid not to keep going with this. It's a huge phenomenon both in Japan, and it's pretty popular in America now, too. And I'm among the anime people.
Were you going to say, Mr. Osaka? Mikuru was recently, I'm going to mention this little side topic. Recently there was this big petition started in Japan that would allow people to marry fictional characters. And the guy who started this petition, who is a very special person, said that he wanted to marry Mikuru Asahina from Haruhi.
And I had not heard that. I did not know the character whom he wished to wed.
Yeah.
It was Mikuru?
Yeah, it was. But she kind of acts like a, you know, a stereotypically beaten-down spouse. She cries a lot, and Haruhi forces her to do things that she doesn't want to do. It's a little uncomfortable. I mean, it's supposed to be a funny situation, and yeah, it's a TV show, so we can laugh at that. But Haruhi makes her dress up and pass out those flyers and so on. Did anyone else get that vibe from the show?
A little bit, but I mean, we're dealing with a different culture here, so maybe that's, you know, attractive in Japan.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I never thought about that.
I thought Mikuru was really cute, but, you know, the whole, like, forcing her to dress up like a maid and stuff, having her cry.
And the bunny outfit.
You gotta remember that Mikuru is a time traveler, so later Kyon meets her older version, who's, like, really mature.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, like, completely different from her teenage version.
Right.
They don't specify how old each one is, but, well, the teenage one is 16. The older one is older. Kyon is most attracted to Mikuru, but Haruhi is attracted to Kyon.
Unconsciously, of course. But
unconsciously, right.
Does that mean that Kyon ever really had a choice then at the end of the show? Yeah, at the end of season one, he is with Haruhi. But is he only with her because she decided he would be?
I don't know. I don't think that Kyon is the type that would just go along with something like that, so I do believe that there is some mutual attraction between the two, but how much and how little is the question on either side, because...
Yuki has a pretty strong following over in Japan, because she's the emotionless Ray-like girl in this show. Do you think that translated over here well, or is everyone over here more interested in Haruhi?
I don't know. I don't think Yuki is as popular here as she is there, obviously. I don't...
Yeah, I think it's all about Haruhi here.
Yeah, it's all Haruhi here. Different cultures and stuff like that. I'm not actually that big a fan of Yuki, because I'm not into the whole, you know, emotionless kind of girl kind of thing, like the Ray characters. I'm just like, come on, smile.
So I have a question for everybody. Except for the people who had already read the books, was anyone else besides me really surprised when Ryoko pulled the knife out of nowhere and ran after Kyon with it?
I was pretty surprised, yeah. She didn't seem... Well, I think that's the point. She didn't seem like the type that would just go, oh, you know what? I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
She also used very... I had the same reaction myself.
Yeah. She also used very polite Japanese while she was doing it, too, which was sort of, you know, it was a fun combination of radically different concepts. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to kill you now, okay? What?
Like, I apologize greatly, but yeah. I'm going to kill you. Yeah, I think it's because both Yuki and what was her name, Ryoko Asakura.
Yeah, Asakura and Ryoko. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're both created by the space data entity being thing. So it obviously does not have a firm grasp upon human, you know, intersocial relationships, because both of the things they created are just weird. Made two complete contrasts to try and even itself out when it's sent to, you know,
well,
centuries.
I kind of wonder if Ryoko is a later model than Yuki, because Yuki is completely emotionless and is just there to observe things, whereas Ryoko is a little bit better at integrating herself into society. And
right.
Although she doesn't seem to have a non-happy, energetic side, she's just all surface.
So you're saying that Yuki's the prototype?
I don't know. I was just
right, but I think they did that on purpose, because Yuki is completely emotionless, but she's actually the one that's the most, you know, pure-hearted and stuff. But Ryoko is completely all happy and bubbly all the time, and yet she tries to kill you.
Okay, is one the id and one the super ego? Maybe not.
Possibly. I don't know.
The next thing we got to know is, does anyone have anything they want to add about discussing Haruhi Suzumiya?
Okay, who's everybody's favorite character then, since we've been discussing the characters?
I like Yuki best.
Me too. Yuki is the best.
I don't know. My favorite girl would probably be Haruhi. And, you know, but I still like Kyon the best as my favorite character, not as my, you know, as the cutest, oh my god, no. Not like that.
Haruhi's influencing you, you know, and or maybe you're afraid of Haruhi influencing you. So, like, Itsuki, you're saying that to prevent her from making you say that.
I can go with that, yes.
Okay. Whatever.
I'm just kidding. But yeah, Kyon is my favorite character because of the things we discussed and the fact that, you know, he's a normal guy stuck in this crazy world.
Is it sort of surprising, though? Some of the things he says to Haruhi are really quite cold, and it seems like he doesn't really seem to have much fear of her. Maybe that's one of the reasons why she likes him so much. All these other characters do what she says, but he doesn't bend to her will so easily.
Right. Maybe. You know, I've heard an odd theory about the Haruhi and the Kyon relationship, if I could bring that up.
Sure. Okay. What's up?
I've heard the theory that it's actually Kyon who has the reality bending powers, and he uses Haruhi as a sort of proxy to live out his crazy dreams.
Okay. The only thing about that, though, is that it seems like he is taken along by it instead of benefiting from it.
Right. it's just a theory. It's an interesting theory.
It seems like a bit of a stretch, though. Like a pretty big stretch. Okay.
Okay.
Well, then, I suppose we're going to go on to the next subject on our list, and... Well, what would you guys like to do next? Shall we do the American McGee's Alice one and its reception in Japan, or shall we do Lucky Star? It's up to you.
Lucky Star.
I vote for Lucky Star.
Okay, we're going to talk about Lucky Star. Ken, have you seen this show?
Yes.
Yes.
Cool.
All episodes.
Yeah. This.
We're all there.
It's very much, to me, the Seinfeld of Japan. Just a bunch of people hanging out and talking and shooting the bull and occasionally doing something funny while they do it.
It's very Seinfeld. It has some very Seinfeldian overtones, I will give it that. But then again, it goes its own direction with it. Mm. It's not completely a show about nothing.
Yep.
I don't know. What do you guys like about the show? Let's start with that.
That's a good question.
obviously, it's a show about cute girls, and they're talking about, you know, things cute girls wouldn't normally talk about.
Yeah, they...
Like, you know...
Well, they're sort of proxies for their audience. Kanata is sort of like an adult male otaku, but also a girl. She plays games like Fate Stay Night and Shuffle and collects the manga and anime goods for those things. But those... one is this sort of strange, very dark and violent and kind of sexy in some ways story about the Holy Grail War in Fuyuki City. And the other one is a dating simulation game where you can go out with beautiful girls who are either human or part or in whole demon or part in whole god. But both of those games are not things that that girls typically would play. They tend to be far more popular with the male otaku population of Akiba.
Right. Konata plays a lot of dating sim games, and her friends are always like, you know, what?
Yeah. One of the quotes from the show is, why are you so familiar with the adult game studios?
Konata has a problem of discerning reality from fiction. Like, she, like, when they're in the bathhouse, she's like, she puts a bar of soap behind Miyuki because... She wants to unlock all the flags, is what she says.
Yeah.
No, she wants to unlock the picture gallery, is what she says.
Right.
She says this is obviously a flag.
Yeah. we've just triggered a flag.
Exactly.
Yeah. I should explain something for our audience who may not have played any of these games. In them, sometimes you come across an event where you're presented with a choice, and depending on what kind of choice you make, you may earn affection points for a particular girl, and if you earn enough affection points, you can unlock an event where you and the girl spend important quality time together. And then, of course, that becomes CG that you can look at later in the game. Or if you make a bad kind of choice in this game, then you might end up breaking up with that girl. Or, like, say, in Fate Stay Night, you might even get killed. Being killed in a particularly bad way is, unfortunately, one of the various dead ends, as they're called in that game.
Is it bad end or dead end?
Right. Although Konata has a lot of difficulty separating manga from reality, I think perhaps the one who has the greatest difficulty is Patricia Martin, the transfer student. Did you want to say something about her, sir? Mr. Osaka?
Well, I was like, when I first saw her, I thought they cross over. How is she at them? She's typical Gojin, what's it called? Oh, foreigner. Who?
Yeah. Ryugase.
Yeah, I thought, was that sort of like...
Japanese from anime, sorry.
Yes, she learned all her anime and, all of her anime and manga helped her learn vocabulary, so she has a very odd and eclectic blend of it. But she's very interested in boys' love and yaoi, and is very energetic. She's kind of like unfortunately, she's quite a bit like a scary fangirl.
Do you think that maybe that is Japan's commentary on the American otaku?
Well, for a long time, at least on the sprinklings that I read from Japanese blogs and so on, they didn't think that people... that American otaku really existed the way that they did in Japan, but I gotta say, I think
that's enough.
Maybe we don't have a kakure otaku, the people who are in, otaku but are in hiding and denial about it, the way that they do over there. Maybe we're over here, we're more open about it. What do you guys think about that?
I don't know. Actually, I would say that we do have some of those kind of people, like on. You know, 4chan, I hate to bring that up, but they talk about suppressing your power level. That's a thing from Dragon Ball Z. In Dragon Ball Z, you can suppress your power level and appear weaker than you are for people who can sense it. But they say suppressing your power level, hiding the fact that you're into anime and manga so you can fit in with normal people or just don't have to deal with other anime fans. So I still think that there's somewhat of an idea of trying to hide it from other people, but I think maybe less so.
There's something like that in the book Real Ultimate Power by Robert Hamburger, where his babysitter tells Robert that you can't always talk about ninjas all the time, even though you love them so much, because the real world doesn't work that way, and you can be yourself in your bedroom, but outside you kind of have to put on the mask that society expects you to wear. And he gives the own example of how people would not hire him for a job interview if he were to go in there dressed up like a baby in a diaper.
That's pretty hot.
Right. Well, there is sort of a, you know, there is sort of a social stigma on that kind of stuff. Not just with anime, but all sorts of stuff. Like, if I walked into a job interview wearing a Starfleet uniform, I probably wouldn't get hired.
Well, maybe if it was for a Star Trek store, they might take your enthusiasm in a different light. But, yeah. I think that they have Kagami in the show to sort of counterbalance this sort of otaku-ness. Also,
right.
She's the skumi in that Japanese comedy pattern on the show. The one who tells everybody, okay, guys, this is just getting too silly.
She is the this is getting way too silly, you guys. Let's back it up. Let's back the train up a little bit. Character, which I don't know. I don't really like that character. Because I know that character in real life, and I always tell him to shut up. Because
the funny thing about Kagami and Kanata is that they argue like they're married. Yeah. Yeah, as a result, even in the final episode of the show, I guess the creators of the show realized how common it was for the fans of the show to, I guess the term is slash those two together.
Right, I think it is slash.
Yeah. So they had this part where they looked at each other and blushed, I guess, is a little bit of fan service for that.
Right. There's, you know, there's always going to be different pairings in any kind of show. And you were talking about, you know, Patricia Martin, she's into yaoi and stuff, and yaoi fangirls are always slashing two characters together. Most
yeah.
of them are not even
remotely attracted to each other, like the various Cloud right. and Sephiroth fangirls.
They spent
the entire game trying to kill each other, but hey, that just really means that they're in love with each other, according to them.
Exactly.
That's pretty hot.
No, it's not.
No.
Also,
you're right.
Yeah. Speaking of hiding your power level, one of my favorite moments in the show was when Konata showed off Tamura Hiyori's manga that she had drawn to her friends, and she was very embarrassed about that, particularly since she had used two of her friends as models for her manga, and thus one of the people said, you know, it feels really realistic. I almost feel like I've been through this scenario before. I said, that's because I fictionalized your life.
I always love those scenes. They make me laugh.
Yeah, that show, it's pretty funny, but there's still people who don't like it, and I don't know why. I've heard many things about why they don't like it.
What are some of the reasons? Do they just complain that it's too mellow, that they just sort of sit around or walk around and talk?
That's one complaint I hear a lot. Another complaint I hear a lot is that there's lots and lots of inside references to otaku culture and video games and stuff. And if you're not, you know, very, very privy on that subject, a lot of the jokes go right over your head.
Like, for instance, when Kanata says that the twin tails of Kagami are the sign of a tsundere, she's speaking of Tosaka Rin from Fate Stay Night, who is very much like that and has the same hairstyle, but unless you played that game, you wouldn't catch the reference.
Right, exactly. There's a lot of things. Even me, who's, you know, somewhat well-versed in this stuff, a lot of the jokes I had to go, what? And I had to go look it up.
Yeah, look it up on the internets. I love the part where her friend, her cousin, Yui, the cop starts driving really erratically and very quickly and not with enough care, and they start playing this Initial D-like music to it and even switch into
right.
the Initial D character design style for that.
And right. then there's, like, these guys screaming out comments, she's doing the triple drift and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just like Initial D. And if you haven't seen Initial D or even know what Initial D is, that entire, like, 2 minutes of the show is just lost on you. So I can understand why people wouldn't like it like that. But, I mean, this show is made for people who are into this stuff. It's not made for, you know...
It's not made for casual fans. It's made for adepts.
and right. Another thing I've heard a complaint about the show is that it tries to capitalize too much on the popularity of other shows. Like it makes a bunch of references to the melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya.
Right, including the Haruhi.
Because they're made by the same studio. And right, she actually knows that. Konata works in a cosplay cafe, which is an awesome concept. But she actually does the dance in one of the episodes, and that's the first episode you meet Patricia Martin in.
Yep, and she's also voiced by Hirano Aya, who is the voice actress for Haruhi Suzumiya.
Right,
which is why when she's cosplaying as Haruhi, she can do a perfect rendition of the voice because she's being played by the same actress.
But yeah, that's one thing I've heard, but I don't really understand that complaint. I mean, a bunch of shows make references to other things. People didn't complain if Excel Saga did a parody of something else.
And it certainly made a lot of different parodies, didn't it?
It did.
Yeah. What about her other classmates?
Like, Miyuki?
Miyuki, the pink-haired girl with the glasses, who is sort of clumsy but very smart and is a walking encyclopedia.
Right, yeah. She's my favorite girl out of the girls.
Yep.
But yeah, I hear that she's not very popular anywhere because she doesn't really. I hear that she follows too many anime stereotypes.
Oh, she's a walking anime stereotype.
Yeah, that's really the point of her character. She follows a bunch, and Konata gets to comment on it. Mm-hmm. And then Kagami gets to pop up and say, "Snap back to reality."
Yeah. What about Hiragi Tsukasa, the twin sister of Hiragi?
Oh, her.
Yeah, the one who kind of looks like the girl from Two Heart.
Yeah. I've heard that. Actually, in one of the episodes, Konata, for their birthday, Konata gets Tsukasa the uniform from Two Heart.
That was a pretty expensive present, too. That uniform was, I think, over $150. So that was a pretty expensive present. I hope that she takes good care of that.
There's also another Two Heart episode. I mean, Two Heart reference where the guy tries to take a picture of Tsukasa.
Yeah. Because he thinks that she's cosplaying as the lady from Two Heart, the Kamigishi Akari.
Right.
Also, the other thing is that people are saying that he's modeled after the director of Haruhi or something like that. I'm not sure if that's true or not.
It might be.
Okay, then.
What were you?
I kind of felt a lot of empathy for their school teacher. Nanako Kuroi, the single girl who spends all her time playing that online RPG with Konata, because she does worry about the fact that she's getting older and that she's still single, and I think that that's unfortunately something that some of the fans of the show can somewhat relate to.
Yeah, sometimes.
And if someone says, "Speak for yourself," I am.
Sometimes, you know, in the dead of winter, it hits you. Man, I am getting old. But yeah, she's an interesting character in that fact. Like the Christmas episode where they're saying, like, they compare Christmas cake to women who are getting older because, mm-hmm. you know, every
after
Japanese
25.
Person... Yeah, after... Because in Japan, you buy a cake on Christmas, but after Christmas Day, all those cakes are left over, nobody wants them.
And,
so
and they have to greatly discount them to get someone to buy them.
Right. So after 25, you know, nobody wants you.
Yeah.
And then she overhears them talking.
28?
Yeah. 27.
Okay.
She overhears them talking, and then she runs out and buys a cake. And she's like, "It's not left over because I bought it."
That's right. So and she
okay.
That's fine.
Yeah, she does play a wizard.
Yep.
And Konata play tank.
Yep. Has anyone else seen the OVA where the other characters join in?
I have not seen that.
Okay.
I have.
Fill us in.
It's very good. I talked about the second short where they're in that OVA. What's it called? OVA.
Oh, the OVA, the original video animation.
No, the OME RPG is what it's called?
The MMORPG. Massive Multiplayer Online RPG is the term.
Okay, thank you. in that short, two new characters join in their game. I'm sure you know who they are.
Of course.
But I think I heard, yes.
And it is, of course, Kagami and Tsukasa. Kagami is, of course, unhappy that the job classes that she saw in the anime for this show are not in the in the actual video game itself. And Tsukasa is playing the game the way that maybe your mom plays video games. That is, you know, just scroll endlessly through the menu and not choose anything.
Oh, that's what my favorite part of the show is, that short. It's her clicking, clicking, clicking.
Yes. And then finally she figures out that to send a message in the chat, she has to press the enter key.
Where's the enter key?
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to be any key.
Yeah. She throughout the show, she's sort of a clueless noob in just about everything. She's
right. She's a bit of an airhead.
She's a sweet girl, but she's just not very bright.
Right.
Yeah.
And I hear that's I hear Tsukasa's actually pretty popular. Maybe because she's a bit of a space case.
Yeah. My most favorite short of the OVA is the one where the Cinderella one.
Is that the one where, I've seen that one. It's the one Kagami gets dragged by Kanata to attend a Budokai. Kagami is dragged to is not what she thought. They actually, Kanata was using different kanji characters to say the word that's a homonym, but it was actually a martial arts type match. It was a women's wrestling type thing. And Misao is the prince of that area and says that obviously Kagami has come there to be her bride. And after a series of adventures, Kagami finally gets home, and it turns out that she was dreaming, and she woke up screaming that she wanted to combine bodies with Kanata. I guess that was what she had dreamed she had to say in the dream. But her sister was sitting right next to her and went off to call Kanata and tell her that, which was sort of funny.
That was the best part of that short.
You don't tell the other person when someone screams out in the middle of the night that they wish to combine bodies.
Well, if you're Tsukasa, you are, because they're sisters and they're teenagers, which means that they have to compete against each other. And Tsukasa is not about to let that chance just pass on by.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
I would have saved it, though. I would have saved it for another time and been like, remember that time?
Oh, yeah.
You said you wanted
Oh, yeah, this is prime blackmail material.
Exactly.
Or maybe when you screw up and the other person is about to let it go, say, when you said this, I didn't say anything. I let it go, man. So now it's time for you to know what you can do for me. So we're starting to, I think, exhaust this topic, too, which means it might be time for us to go on to our next one. But before we do, I got to ask, Anime Dude, how are you doing for time?
I should probably be getting back now.
Well, okay. All right. Well,
so,
in that case...
Thanks for having me on. If you want me to come back, I'd be happy to do it.
We sure do. We enjoy having the company, and we would like you to come back in future shows.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. Alrighty. So, now it's time for us to go on to our final topic, that is American McGee's Alice, or Alice in Nightmare, as it is known in Japan. And I understand that Mr. Osaka here wants to talk about the Japanese dub for it.
Yeah, I managed to get a hold of it, imported from Japan, because I have a friend from Japan who sent me stuff, so I asked him for Christmas to buy it and send it to me, and I actually got it today,
mm-hmm.
and I played it.
Okay.
I have to say the Japanese version is better than the American version.
It's better, you say? How so?
The voices gives it more of an edge to it, more darker edge than the American version does. From the voices.
The American voice for Alice had sort of a very indifferent kind of air to it. The Japanese one did seem a little more, uneasy.
Yeah, my favorite voice actor was the cat.
I remember reading several articles about how the voice for the Cheshire Cat was particularly well regarded.
Yeah, I heard that too. the Red Queen was another thing I actually really liked about it. Mm-hmm. I just trying to remember who that voice actress was. Damn, I'm trying to remember.
Mm-hmm.
She sounds familiar. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
I don't know voice actress by name.
Okay, well, I tried looking for the list myself, but I just couldn't find it. Alice in Wonderland appeals to a lot of people for different reasons, because Alice is a young girl, but intellectually she's very mature, and is sort of in this very odd position, this very odd state where she has to try and figure out what's going on and to deal with it. It's, I guess it's sort of a big metaphor for adolescence, particularly given the various stuff that she takes in the story to get bigger or smaller as the case is needed. Maybe it's a big metaphor about the kinds of roles we play to get by in this world.
I never thought about that. Okay. Think, yeah, I never read the books myself.
Although Lewis Carroll was not a very had some pretty bad problems, I think that this book is worth reading regardless of that. Some of the ways that Alice has been adapted in Japan is, for instance, when they make a play of it, one director dressed up the Mad Hatter in a combination of Western clothes and traditional Japanese clothes, trying to make a statement that he's become a Meiji-type merchant who is having difficulty retaining his own unique cultural identity in this big clash of the cultures going on in that time period.
Really? I never knew that there was a play on Alice over there.
Well yeah. It's been, in, you know, turned into plays, into comics, into anime. I mean, let me see. Miyuki-chan in Wonderland is certainly an example of that, although that borrows quite a bit of inspiration from Barbarella in the way that everyone is chasing after her.
There's also a lot of references to Alice in other anime, especially in Severus Experiment Lane.
Uh-huh. Yeah, her friend Arisu, who's cast in this strange world. But unlike the Alice in Wonderland, she isn't able to deal with all the weird stuff that's going on around her. The Arisu in Lane just quickly goes catatonic when she finds out what's really going on in the world.
Yeah, the other references are in games as well, especially, I think, in Silent Hill, I think. I'm not sure. I better look that up.
I think you might be thinking of The Wizard of Oz because of the three keys that...
Oh, that's right.
...that Harry has to get to open the front door are the Scarecrow key and the Lion key and so on. But those are characters from The Wizard of Oz. Well, if you want to talk about Silent Hill 3 and the strange world that Heather is thrown into, the nightmare world, maybe that comparison is relevant.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that game. Yeah, I really think that that can be compared to Alice as well. Silent Hill 3. Is
okay. In that case, maybe we could say that Valtiel is sort of like the White Rabbit who is leading her along this path, perhaps. Ken, what do you think about the whole Alice mythology?
And pertaining to what?
Well, let's see, its reception in Japan, or perhaps its popularity in the West. It's one of those stories that seems to cross over to just about every culture.
It's kind of popular everywhere. I think it's mainly, it's sort of, it has a sort of surreal nature to it, where, you know, we're put in a fantasy world where, I guess that it was one of the it was one of the first stories I remember where you take a normal character and what we assume lives in a world, you know, same as ours, and then she's pushed into this world that doesn't even really make a lot of sense to some degree, or it's like just played with riddles, mm-hmm. or that the world is real itself. So I think that is kind of its appeal that and there's a lot of things that we base stories off of. So it's really interesting that it's very diverse and people are able to build diversity off the concept that's introduced.
Also, the story lends itself well to being adapted to other media because you can do so much with it. There's the classic Disney movie, which makes Wonderland look like a very fun and beautiful place, but then there's there's the other treatment of it, American McGee's Alice, in which Wonderland is not a very sane or safe place to be in, and if you get stuck in there, you definitely will want to get out of it as soon as possible.
Yeah, I guess there were never really any comforting feelings when she ever got into the world. Like, I think every time, like, she kind of stumbled upon something that she thought was interesting, it somehow got turned around into something crazy.
Yep.
Which is really interesting because it's, you know, a lot of people feel it's more of a children's story.
Basically because I don't think that they're comfortable with the idea of fantasy not telling a story that is for children. Just a Western genre bias, maybe. Yeah.
And I really like how he turned the story around, make it more symbolic and darker than the original Disney film. Well, it wasn't dark, but you get what I mean.
Yes, I do. There was one other thing about the new version of it, the video game. In the video game, like in the clip I showed you from YouTube, Ken, ordinary objects themselves took on a darker use. A kitchen knife was used as a melee weapon by Alice. Jax became these sort of enemy-seeking missiles and so on. I guess maybe that ties into the whole idea of the cute and the ordinary being twisted around into something horrific and frightening.
Well, I did get that feeling from the game, so.
Okay.
And especially in the opening, where she's in the Salem Asylum, right? Where
yes.
She's in the bed.
And they ask her what's broken, and she says, "I am."
Yeah, that's the one. That really gives a feeling that they think she's crazy or she has guilt.
Yeah.
When her parents died in the fire.
Well, the fun thing about that is that it was a cat who apparently knocked something over that started the fire, and I can't help but think of the emaciated, skeletal-looking cat from the video game and wondering if Wonderland is a projection of her own subconscious. Is that cat... that devilish grinning cat, the way that she views her own pet for starting the fire.
I never thought about that.
It's also a hairless cat. Maybe all the hair got burned off. Okay. What were your thoughts about playing through it?
It was pretty fun, actually. I love the whole adventure aspect of it. Melee fighting, I think it's what it's called, where you had to beat in the boss battles were enjoyable. They weren't easy or hard, but in between.
All right, then.
I was really creeped out by the Mad Hatter's new design.
Yeah, that was with the gear in his chest. That was rather frightening. Yeah. I thought that the score for the game was really well done. They hired a guy who collaborates with Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, and he ended up using a lot of
Gives it
very dark ambient type stuff.
Yes.
Well then, is there anything else that that we can say about this?
Well, I don't really have much to say about that one.
Okay. All right then. Okay, Ken?
Yeah.
You wanted to describe to your feelings on, or to talk about your feelings concerning certain things?
Yeah, I guess I just have one comment. I'm really looking forward to the new DS, the DSi, so I can take pictures of myself while playing Cooking Mama. Other than that, I don't really see its appeal too much.
Yeah, it does seem odd to take out the Game Boy Advance cartridge slot and then put in a digital camera with that, because so many devices can take pictures now. Cell phones, many of them have a digital camera integrated into the phone. There are dedicated digital cameras. It just doesn't seem like the DS is doing anything special with this. Maybe if it were a USB accessory, it would be a little bit more practical.
The Game Boy Color camera.
Well, that wasn't very good, but I was thinking more of the PSP camera, which is okay.
Yeah.
There was like a game that had like the need for the feature, then it'd probably be interesting.
Well, are you referring to something like the iToy type games?
I think that's...
Well, those were fun, and I played a little of those on the PS2, And eventually I might pick up the one for the PS3 now that I have one, but it still feels quite a bit like a gimmick for video games. I don't know, it just doesn't feel quite as smoothly integrated into the course of playing the game as, say, for example, the controller.
All right,
yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for stopping by.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to call it a day, but I really enjoyed, you know, this podcast. So.
Okay, cool.